Good evening, everyone. My name is Abraham, and I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here tonight. You know, I'm grateful to be here tonight, man. You know, this guy here that we're coming to introduce, you know, was my first sponsor when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, December the 9th of 1988, you know, and Bernard's his sponsor. So I'm going to introduce him now, you know, and it's a privilege to have you here. Tomas, come on up.
My name is Tomas, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to, first off, welcome anybody that's new, the newcomers, you know, the AA program of recovery from a hopeless, helpless state of mind and body. I want to thank, you know, Abraham and Bill, you know, for, you know, the class act, man, that you guys showed, you know, and welcoming me. And I want to thank, you know, the rally group. You know, I was thinking, you know, it's a good name for a group, man, the Valley Group. Because this valley here is my neighborhood, man, you know, all the way from Bakersfield, you know, to Sacramento. And let me tell you something. If you can make it in Visalia and in Fresno, shit, you can make it anywhere. I mean, Visalia is not easy, man, and neither is Fresno, you know. I hit my bottom in Fresno in 1975, you know. And I came in out of the hospital. And I was in the hospital as a result, you know, of a brawl that I got involved in, you know. You know, I shattered my hip and my leg. And I've been estranged from my family, you know. I, like any good alcoholic, man, you know, I had the law after me, you know. I had creditors after me, you know. And But I ended up at the emergency hospital at the Old Valley Medical Center, you know, in Fresno on Kings Canyon and Cedar. They took me there in an ambulance, you know, and I've been out in the streets long enough to know that if it was a hospital, there had to be some drugs. So I'm laying there, you know, in the emergency room in the hospital saying, give me some, you know, and I don't know if you've ever been to an emergency hospital, man, but it's like a jungle in there, you know, and they give me a shot of morphine, you know, to shut me up, you know, and I wasn't feeling any pain. Next thing I know, man, I began to feel an itch on my knee, you know. And then it began to hurt. And the pain got so bad that it woke me up. And when I woke up, they had me strapped down to this bed. And there's a fellow, you know, drilling a hole through my knee with the kind of drill you use to drill through metal. And I'm looking at him and I say, give me some. So he gave me another shot of morphine. And I remember going on the thing, shit, I'll break my other leg. I'm getting a shot of morphine every 3 hours. You see, I had been in AA in 73. I come from an alcoholic family. I have, you know, the three of us that are in Alcoholics Anonymous. My older brother just turned 44 years in AA. And my younger brother has about 40 years. They do the same thing that you and I do in Phoenix, Arizona, and in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You know. But they crossed at me, my brother, his Al-Anon, and my Al-Anon, took me to a meeting, you know, of Alcoholics Anonymous in Fresno. Back then, there was no Narcotics Anonymous in the Valley. There were no Spanish-speaking Alcoholics Anonymous in the Valley. All there was Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. But I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready in 73. I stopped drinking, but I tried to prove that I was the exception to the rule. So I won't drink. I'm an alcoholic, but I'll keep on using dope. So in 75, I hit my bottom. I ended up in the hospital, you know, strapped down to a bed. I really should have been strapped to, you know, one of those jackets that they put on crazy people, you know. A straitjacket, yeah. But they were giving me a shot of morphine every 3 hours, you know, and I wasn't feeling any pain, man. And one day, you know, the head nurse comes over. She says to me, you know, the doctor wants to talk to you tomorrow. He asked me to arrange a meeting, you know, with you, man, because he wants to talk to you. which, you know, reminds me of a story I heard from good people in Alcoholics Anonymous. The things I know I learned from people that have passed it on to me. The people that helped me were people that were trying to stay sober. See, that's what we do here, man. People that are trying to stay clean, trying to stay sober, by helping other people who want to get clean to stay sober. But it's only about this little wino. A little wino, you know, he's in and out of detox centers, you know, he's in and out of recovery homes, you know, and they can't do nothing with the guy, you know. Finally, you know, the accomplice says to him, you know, hey, the head person here, the doctor wants to talk to you. He asked me, you know, to arrange a meeting with you. So they bring the little wino in and sit him across the doctor sitting at this table, you know, with a white cloth over it, and he has a clear glass of water and a clear glass of alcohol. And a little worm. So the little wino sits, you know, across the table from the doctor, and the doctor picks up the little worm and says to the little wino, you see that? The wino says, yeah. So he drops the little worm, in the little glass of water. So that little worm starts to swim around, you know, just as happy as can be, doing his somersaults, you know, and the doctor picks him up and says to the little wino, you see that? The wino says, yeah. So then he gets the little worm and he drops it in the clear glass of alcohol. So that little worm starts to swim around, you know, and the next thing you know, it stiffens up straight as a board, man, and floats up to the top of that glass of alcohol, dead as a doornail. The doctor says to the little wino, did you see that? The little wino says, yeah. Well, did you learn anything from it? The little wino says, yeah. If I keep on drinking, I won't get worms. The doctor says he wants to talk to me, you know, so I go over there and the doctor says, you know what, Tomasi, we got two kinds of patients in this hospital that are self-destructive. And you fall into one of those categories. We have one patient that comes in this hospital, and regardless of what's bothering them, whether it's a pain in the ass, a handnail, they want to get cut, they want an operation. And you fall into the second category. You're the kind of patient that never wants to get off of that drug. So we're going to get you off of that morphine with some Percodan. So I'm getting a shot of morphine every 3 hours, some Percodan to get me off of the morphine, two codeine to sit on my stomach, and two reds to go to sleep at night because one's not enough. My partner comes to visit me, the first thing comes out of my mouth is, are you holding anything? So he proceeds to lay a bullet on me, and I drop it, you know. And you know, they say that a man knows when he's going to die. So, you know, I began to feel weak, you know what I'm saying? And I turned white as a sheet, man, you know? And the nurse comes over, man, and takes my blood pressure, and they find out that I'm bleeding internally, man. So, you know, they start giving me a blood transfusion. You know, I got, you know, hoses coming up my arms, my nose, you know? And I said, I've had it this time, man. I get on the telephone, I call home, and I say, Mama, bring me the rosary. I've had it this time. She didn't want to see me anymore. You see, in AA, man, we got to look at the similarities. Never mind the differences, man. Never mind, you know, we're all different from each other. But we all have a lot of things in common. And one of the things we have in common is that we hurt the people that we love. We hurt the people that we should be helping. See? So she didn't want to see me anymore. So I started to pray. I was real good at praying, man, when I was locked up or in the hospital or hurting, you know. And I say, God, you know, give me another chance, and you know, I won't do this again. You know, I'll change my way. And he answered me, man, right on the fourth floor of the Raleigh Medical Center. He says, you know what, Tomas? I'm fed up with your ass. And I'm going to let you die. Yeah. So, you know, I'm blessing everybody, man. I mean, I want to get out of that shit. And the custodians, anybody that's walking by, I'm blessing them, man. With just one leg, you know, because my other leg was in a cast, you know. They couldn't find a place to put me. Nobody wanted me. Somehow the higher power touched my Al-Anon's heart. You know, I have an Al-Anon, man. She's got more time in the program than I do. You guys know Al-Anon? You know, my wife's a black belt Al-Anon. I was just telling the Thomas man, you know, I found, you know, the ladies, they no different than most folks, you know. Ladies ain't no different than most folks, in that they want everything their way, okay? And what helps me is that state of surrender. Because surrender triggers a positive. Just like in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. Surrender triggers the positive. That's why my sponsor's here, man. My sponsor and his significant other, you know, Sylvia, you know, Nikki, they make sure, man, that I stay on that beam. God bless you guys. Somehow the higher power touched her heart and she took me in. They took me home in an ambulance. Okay? They released me with a prescription of codeine. Alright? I was home and, you know, she had made this room for me. I had 5 children. They'd all go off to school. She'd go off to work. Somebody had to work. And I'd be confined to this body cast. They released me with a body cast that weighed more than I did, man. I mean, I didn't weigh 90 pounds. You know? And the body cast came all the way up to my, you know, to my chest. Down below my knee. You know? And I was confined, you know, talk about being confined to this body cast, man. And this room that she had arranged for me with clean sheets, you know, and she'd take off to work, the children take off to school, and I'd be looking up at the ceiling, and the ceilings were cracking, man. And the windows were shattered. See? And I'd be thinking to myself, man, waiting for somebody to come home, you know. I'd be thinking, here you are, playing the big shot. Because I was a big shot when I was half shot. See, you're playing the big shot and you haven't done a damn thing to help this family, man. You know? So she was going to those Al-Anon meetings at the Alamo Club. On one side was Al-Anon, the other side was AA. Like I said, back then there was no NA. There was a handful of fellas who were trying to start it. There was no Spanish-speaking AA. There was a handful of guys who were trying to start it. See? Today, man, there's not a night or day that goes by that you don't find meetings of Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous in Spanish, man, or English. I don't got to tell you about that, man, all over the valley. See? So things have changed a little bit, man, you know. But she would go to the Al-Anon meetings, you know what I'm saying? And one day I said to her, well, take me to one of those meetings with you, man. And I went to the meetings and I walked into that meeting, man, like, you know, like I fallen on a hand grenade, you know what I'm saying? I could barely get by the door. The cat was about this big. I had a hell of a time getting there, man. You know, I couldn't bend over. So, you know, in order to get into the car, you know, my sons had to stand in the back, my wife stood in the front, and then I had to fall back, you know, and then they had to catch me and then squeeze me in the back seat. Then when we got to the club, man, it was even harder getting out of that damn car, you know. But I walked into that meeting, man, you know, like something the cat dragged in, you know, and a bunch of cowboys. There was a bunch of cowboys there, man, and I've been fighting cowboys all my life. And they laid that cowboy talk on me. They laid that cowboy talk on me, man. And then, you know, an alcoholic is a close relative to the mule. You want to get the attention of a mule, you got to hit it beside the head with a 2x4. A woman's ass and a whiskey's ass turn into a horse's ass. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Yeah, why are we talking about horses? Is it the horse has to go in front of the cart? If you got the cart in front of the horse, you're not going to get anywhere. Until you admit to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic, you've got the cart in front of the horse. You're not going to get nowhere. This program is not going to work, man, until you admit to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. That's what they told me, man. I remember the secretary of the meeting, a fellow named Jim, really big handlebar mustache, and he looked right at me and said, Tomás, you've got to admit to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic in order for this program to work. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Today, I understand why. You see, it's an inside job. The problem's on the inside. That's why when we all come here, we have to admit to our innermost selves that we're alcoholics. I never knew I was a selfish man. Everybody else did. But to the best of my ability, man, you know, I went home. I opened up that prescription of codeine and I flushed it down the toilet. You know? And to my innermost self, I admitted, you know, to myself that I was an alcoholic. It wasn't easy, man. It wasn't easy to, you know, to admit to my innermost self. Because you know and I know that when you're drinking, man, when you're using drugs, you're lying. You have to lie. You lie to yourself, man. And I had covered my innermost self with lies. See? You lie about where you're going. You lie about where you've been. You lie about what you did. See? So to the best of my ability, man, I admitted to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And today I'm grateful, man, that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe, you know, that if you're an alcoholic, and if you're not drinking or using any mind-altering chemicals, you're doing God's will. I was speaking to Dr. Chips this afternoon. You're doing God's will. Because you're not drinking and using drugs. Now, a lot of people can drink. A lot of people can use drugs. And I don't know what God's will is for them. And I don't really care. But I know that for the alcoholic, God's will is to not to drink and not to use drugs. And not to hate, and not to resent, and not to judge. So I admitted to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And then they said to me, hey, man, you're going to have to come to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. And you know, that sanity thing, man, you know, shit. You know, I used to have a clothing store downtown in Fresno. In Tomas Fashions of Fresno. I outfitted some of the sharpest dresses in Fresno. She used to come and see me from L.A., from the Bay, from San Jose, man, you know, and I would dress up sharp, man. I do the buying and the selling. Yeah? I outfitted the Doobie Brothers when they first started out. I think one of them lives here in Visalia, if I'm not mistaken. You know, when they first started out, they come in the Tomas Fashions, and I would dress them up. Red Fox from Sanford and Son, he'd come into my shop, and I would dress up sharp, man. I had mirrors for my customers, you know. I'd be looking, you know, in that mirror, you know, and I had a new leather coat on, a new pair of slacks, man, and I'd be looking sharp. But inside, man, inside I was dying. Yeah? And this here is an inside job. And that's why we admit to our innermost selves that we're alcoholics, man. The problem's on the inside, it's not on the outside. Yeah? And, you know, we come to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. Okay. I don't question my sanity, man. Look. One Christmas Eve, I sent my family to Scotland, okay? You don't give me more freedom to drink and get loaded. Christmas Eve, we locked up the store. Me and my father would go to the Greyhound bus depot to catch the bus to Stockton, okay? We get to the bus station, and there's a big old line. I get in the back of the line. I get my tickets. We get in the back of the line, and he and I were standing there talking to each other. You know, this big old woman comes over and says, "Get straight in line." I look at her and I say, she says, "Get straight in line." I said, "Well, what do you think this is, the army?" And she looked at me and she said, "Well, I ain't afraid of you." And I said, "Well, I ain't afraid of you." And she said, "Well, screw you." I said, "Well, screw you." She said, "Well, screw you." I said, "Well, screw you." And we're standing there screwing each other, you know. Next thing you know, there's a circle of people around us. You know what I'm saying? A police officer comes over, the security says, "What the hell's going on here?" I said, "Nothing, man. We're standing here waiting to catch, you know, the bus to Stockton, you know." And he said, "Sir, this is not the line to Stockton. You're in the wrong line. This is the line to Las Vegas. You want that line over there?" I was in the wrong line, man. I don't question my sanity, man. You know what I'm saying? Since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, man, I haven't had to get in the wrong line. But there's, you know, three things that we all have to do in the second step. Whether you're new, you new people, you gotta do the same thing that, you know, the old people have to do that have been around for a while. The people that helped me are people that have been around for a while and were trying to stay clean and trying to stay sober and trying to think right. And the three things all of us have to do, the first thing we have to do is stop fighting. An alcoholic will fight when there's no reason to fight. We'll drink when there's no reason to drink. We'll worry when there's no reason to worry. Not 1,000 excuses. 1,000 excuses, but no reason. So the first thing we have to do in the second step is to stop fighting. This guy, this drunk, as you know, calls a taxi, he gets in the back of the cab, the cab driver tells him, "Poor juicer," he says, "None of your damn business." Alcoholic will fight when there's no reason to fight. So we have to stop fighting. And we have to relax. How do you relax, man? Do you have, I got 30, 40, 60 days, man, you know, and I want 30 years. So how the hell do you relax? But we have to relax. I feel relaxed right now, man. You know, I always feel relaxed when I'm with you. And the third thing is the hardest thing for you, for me, for all of us, man. Just to have an open mind. Closed-minded people, man, alcoholics. Open that mind just a little bit, man. Open the door just a little bit. Try this just a little bit. Ain't nobody here going to stop you or put a limit on you, you know. But we have to, you know, we have to relax, stop fighting, and open that mind just a little bit. I asked myself at a meeting one time, you know, when I was new, what if there's a God and everybody knows it except me? What if life is really good and everybody knows it except me? You know, we're bombarded with bad news, man. You're going to find what you look for in a meeting of AA or in your home or wherever the hell I'm at. See, no matter where I go, there I am. Hey, I go to the Central Coast, there I am. I go, you know, to New Mexico, there I am. So I have to learn to live where I am. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous does, man. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. It's taught me how to live with me. And I'm grateful for that, man. And I was 35 years old when I got here, the age of 75. I mean, in 1975. More than half of my life, I've been, you know, trying to work the program. But it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, man. Then they told me I was going to have to come, you know, to believe that a power greater than myself would restore me to sanity. And then they told me I'm going to have to make a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God, as I understand it. Now, I love that third step, man, because it tells us that our troubles are our own making. Our troubles are of our own making. That's what the third step tells us, man. And it's also talked about Einstein. You guys know Einstein? The Einstein theory? Somebody said one time, or I read it somewhere, man, where they had asked Albert Einstein, he believed that, you know, that there was a God. And he said, I don't believe, man, I know. But the first step talked about Einstein. Talked about the Einstein theory. You know, if you're like me, you probably analyze things. The whole sentence is don't analyze, utilize. You know that analysis, paralysis, that thinking, you know, that thinking led me to drinking. That's what I was just telling Bill, and a meeting a day keeps the thinking away. And you can't think your way to right living. You have to live your way to right thinking. There's this fellow, man, you know, you've heard about him, man, that has a flat tire out in the wilderness, man, and he goes in the trunk, opens up the trunk, he doesn't have a jack. He looks in every direction, man, you know, see if he can find some help. Nothing, man, finally he sees a little farmhouse way the hell out in here on the west side. So he starts to think. He says, I think I'll go over to that little farmhouse, see if there's any bottle of the jack. I can pick this flat. So he starts walking towards, you know, the house, and he gets halfway down there, and he stops to think again. You know? And this time he says, well, what if I get there and there's nobody home? Well, shit, the guy don't have no choice, man. He keeps on trucking, you know. Finally, you know, he gets three quarters of the way down there, and he stops to think again. You know, alcoholics are a bunch of thinkers. He says, well, what if I get there and they have a jack, but they refuse to lend it to me? Well, the guy ain't got no choice, man. Finally, he gets up there, he walks up a porch. The nicest guy in the world opens the door. The alcoholic says to him, you can shove that jack up your ass. I wasn't going to ask you for it in the first place. The thinking led me to drinking, man. I made a decision, you know, to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand him. You know what I'm saying? I'm here, you know, I'm looking for God, man. I'm looking for God. I went into a mental institution one time, man, to a meeting. You know, and we're sitting there, you know, and they bring all the patients in, you know, and they called on me, man, you know. So I share with them, I say to them, hey, man, I'm looking for God. One of them gets up, say, here I am. He turned my life and my will over to the care of God. Help me, God, help me to live for you today. Instead of for me. Help me to get along. Help me to get along better with my own family. You see, I was a misfit. I didn't fit in my own home. I was a taker. I didn't know how to give. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned how to be a giver instead of a taker. I would go into my own home to see what I could take. Today, man, you know, I try to see what I can give. I try to go to meetings to see what I can contribute, what I can give. I'll take, you know, from the old timers and even from the newcomers. You know, I get a lot from the newcomers, man. You know, I see the miracles that take place in Alcoholics Anonymous on a daily basis. I'm one of the sick ones. I just told Bill I got three sponsors. Bernard, my sponsor, is right here, man. He makes sure I stay on the beam. You know. The other day I bought lunch, he said it was a miracle. But we could all be a little more generous from it. Make a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. You talk about finding a needle in a haystack, man. You know what I'm saying? Fear has got to be a law against fear. It causes more trouble than seeing. And you can't have fear and faith at the same time. These tips are perfect, man. They're perfect for us. We want to look for perfection. Look for an Alcoholics Anonymous, man. May the searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. It's easy to see what's wrong with everybody else, man. What somebody said earlier about you pointing a finger at somebody, the street pointing right back at you. Man. I have to look at the things that are wrong with me. And I can look at what's wrong with you from here till the day I die. It's not going to do a damn thing for me. I have to look at what the hell's wrong with me. And then the fourth step, when we first start to do that, man. Yeah. But, you know, I work with people, you know, with sponsors, you know, and I tell them, make a list. Make a list. Make a list of what's right about you. There's a lot of things about you that are right. Don't just look at what the things that are wrong. You know? I mean, it's a poor day indeed when we haven't done something right. You know? So in Alcoholics Anonymous, man, I learned to look at what's right. You know, bad news sounds. We get all of this rhetoric, man, you know, about the economy, you know, about, you know, what's going on in the other parts of the world, man, you know. We're bombarded with it because that's the only thing that sells. Some poor kid in Florida, man, you know, who had a misfortune, man, shit, the media gets into it and they won't let go. I don't want to hear no bullshit anymore, man. I got enough of that in my head. I have a marching band in my head. But you can't have fear and faith at the same time, and fear causes more trouble than stealing, man. You know. I think, you know, my sponsor told me one time, if you pray, don't worry. I know, there used to be a song, used to say, don't worry, be happy. They played it over and over again on the radio, man, on TV, don't worry, be happy. I went to a meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous, and prisoner, this woman says, I'd like to get a hold of that guy and strangle him. We admit to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. I told my sponsor, hey man, I'm feeling all this guilt when I was new. He looked at me and said, that's because you're guilty, cabrón. We admit to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrong. You know, the fifth step, man, the fifth step is just like taking a big old load off your back. Sometimes I take a fifth step just to get that load off my back. And after I do that, man, I mean, it puts me like a 3-day high on sobriety. Try admitting to God, to yourself, to another human being, the exact nature of your wrong. Selfishness, self-centeredness, self-concern to the extreme. The alcoholic, man. We have to learn to think more of others, man, than we do of ourselves. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous is perfect, because we work with the new people. What we do in AA is we take our own worst problem that we've had in our lives, and we use what we've learned from it to help somebody else who's going through the same problem. And if more people in the world did that, this would be a better world. But you know, I don't belong to this world, but to that world, man. I belong to the world of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the world that I belong to. I don't belong to that world out there, man. The bad news, I ain't going to listen to no shitty-ass music, man. I'll change the damn station. I don't have to listen to no shitty-ass music. And most of it comes from my own head. But I'll change that station. And then we become entirely ready, man. We become entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. Look, man, when I was drinking and using drugs, I was ready. People used to say, the few people that still cared about me used to say, why do you drink so much? Why do you use so much? I didn't want to hear that. But you whispered to me, let's go get loaded, shit, I hear you a mile away. And to become entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. I used to hate, man. I came into AA with a lot of hate, a lot of anger. And I learned about hate, man. I learned hate. When you hate something or someone, man, it's like holding a hot stone in your hand. You want to pierce that thing or that person's heart, man, with that stone that you're holding in your hand, but in the meantime, it's burning the hell out of your hand. Okay? So, Jay, God removed that hate. I don't hate anymore, man. I don't hate anymore. I have peace in my life. I have contentment in my life. Alcoholics Anonymous is for the discontented. Contentment for the discontented, man. You know. So, you know, I'm grateful, man. And I'm ready, man. You know, I'm willing to be ready. I'm willing to be ready to have God remove all of the things about me, man, that are not right. Then if we get to that place, we put it in reverse, man. When we humbly ask Him, you know, to remove our shortcomings. That's when we put it in reverse. And it doesn't happen in a year, man, and it doesn't happen in 3 months, and it doesn't happen sometimes in 10 years, sometimes not even in 20 years. Because let me tell you something, man, it's kind of like this. If you get into your automobile, man, and you got that transmission on drive, you're not going to slam it into reverse because you'll break the damn transmission. See? And it's the same thing with the program, man. You know, we put it in reverse. We put it in reverse, but it doesn't. We don't do it overnight. We don't do it, you know, in a few years. Some guys do. I've seen some fellas come in and get the program right away. But with me, it's been the other way around, man. I come from the school of hard knocks, you know, like most of us. Man. But we put it in reverse in the seventh step. And he says, you know, God, now I am now willing that you should have all of my life. Both the good and the bad of me. I pray that you now remove every defect of character that stands in my way, in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Grant me strength as I step out of here to do thy bidding. Hey, I'm not here alone, man. One time I went in and they invited me to speak over in the Central Coast. I got there, I go down there from Fresno, I get up there, the secretary asked me, are you alone? I said, hell no, I'm not alone, I'm with you guys. Then we make a list. We're making a list, man. You know, old time H used to say, make a list, man. 1, 2, 3. Number one, write the things you like to do. Number two, write the things you have to do. Number three, write the things you hate to do. Now stop doing number three. It's a simple program for complicated people. Another guy says, it's a simple program, man. You know, if you want to get sober, stop drinking. If you want money, get a job. If you want a woman, get 2 jobs. So we make a list. We make a list of people that we've harmed. Okay, who did I harm, man? I harmed Tomas, man. I wouldn't treat my enemy the way I treated myself. I wouldn't put an animal behind bars, man. I wouldn't put anyone behind bars. I wouldn't hurt anybody. I wouldn't make anyone feel like he's not a part of things, man. I wouldn't make anyone feel like he's on the outside looking in. I don't like even seeing anybody being treated that way. I see people treated that way. I've been treated that way. I've been asked, don't come back. So we make a list of people that we harmed, and we put ourselves on top of the list. That's the way I was taught. That doesn't mean I didn't harm other people, man, but I did more harm to Tomas than I did to anyone else. And then we make direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. We're not here to hurt people, man. We're not here to harm anybody. We're here to help people. And there's an old saying, you want to light up a room? Leave it. It's not so much what I do, it's what I don't do. I don't do the shit that I used to do, man. I don't go around demanding, man, you know, that everybody, you know, stand at attention when I walk in the house. For everybody to acknowledge, you know, that I'm there. And I don't do that kind of shit anymore. I used to. I had a difficult time in my own home with my own significant other. I was just telling the fellows on the way down here, man. That's why I had the hardest time is in my own home. Because I wanted to be the boss. I wanted to be in charge. And for a long time, man, I was doing, you know, H&I work. I'm doing, going to meetings, you know. I'm carrying the message. I'm sponsoring people. But I go home, man, and shit, I thought, you know, I couldn't get along with my own family. I felt like I didn't belong in my own home. That's a sad state of affairs, man, for anybody. Should I rather be visiting some prison than go to my own home? You know. But today, man, you know, my home is full of peace. It's full of love. It's full of harmony, man, and understanding. That's the home that I walked into today, man. But it had to start with me. If it was to be, it had to start with me. Should I walk in the house and everybody be all pissed off? I walk in today and I say, thank God it's Friday. Or thank God it's Wednesday, whatever the day it is, man. You know? It had to start with me, man. And you know, Diana and I get along better than what we ever had. My sister-in-law, you know, I got outlaws, man. My sister-in-law, she says, oh, she says, just because you're more mature. I told her, hey, I'm not mature. It's because we pray together. It's because we pray together, man. One time, you know, I went on a panel over to the Carruthers Grand Jail. Okay? I went to H&I, man, God bless them. You know, I went through the panel, I went, you know, that's how when my sponsor took me, he got me involved, you know, in sharing the message. But I went there and there was a big meeting, everybody came out of their cell. But you know, nobody wants to be in the cell, man, you know. So everybody comes out to the meeting and this one fellow walked in and he stood way in the back. He didn't want to get too close to them AAs. Some people are weird. They talk about God. You know, they laugh about the problems they've had. So he didn't want to get too close to the AAs. After the meeting, he walks up to me and he says, hey, Tomas, he says, and then you stop drinking and using drugs and that's all? I said, no, man. I had to start hanging with people that weren't drinking and using drugs. And then I had to start praying. I asked him, have you ever tried praying? He says, no. Maybe you should try praying, man. The man just got out of doing 5 years of Soledad. That same weekend, they picked him up. And his ass was behind jail again. And he was bewildered, man. He couldn't understand what the hell happened. I said, okay, man. Let's see, what did you do when you got out of Soledad? He said, they brought me a bottle. I told him, that's why you're locked up. So, you know, I'm grateful and thankful, man, for the Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I didn't know how to pray. Today, I learned how to pray, man. I learned how to give without expecting anything in return. I learned how to love. I didn't know how to love, man. I didn't know how to live. Oh, I love you, baby. I love you. Marry me, honey. You know, just do what I want you to do. Think what I want you to think. Be what I want you to be. Say what I want you to say. And we'll live happily ever after. I didn't know how to live, man. I didn't know how to love. And they taught me how to love without expecting anything in return. That's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. We love without conditions. That's what we say, let us love you until you learn how to love yourself. Don't leave before the miracles. Then, you know, we continue. We continue to take personal inventory, man. And when we're wrong, we promptly admit it. You know, we continue to admit that we're alcoholics. We continue to come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know something that's beautiful about Alcoholics Anonymous for the benefit of you guys that are new? We don't hide nothing from you, man. We have nothing to hide here in AA. No, we're not hiding anymore. You know, a man or a woman that's hiding is only half alive. A man or a woman that's hiding and lying is only half alive. I want a full life, man. I want to be alive. I don't know how many years I have left, but for the years that I do have left, I want to be alive. And Alcoholics Anonymous is a program for the living. It's not a program for the dead. And as far as I know, the only people that think are people that are living. As far as I know, dead people don't think. So I gotta take care of that thinking. I gotta watch out for that thinking. Whenever the thinking goes up, a warning sign goes up in my head. My mind is my garden. My thoughts are my seeds. I will harvest either flowers or weeds. That comes from the Golden Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, an old book. Some of you old timers might know it. But we continue to take personal inventory. The emotional booby trap. You guys know what a booby trap is? The police use a lot of that here in Visalia. I know they use a lot of that in Fresno. You know, they use booby traps, man, you know, to either capture, you know, an enemy, you know, or to capture an animal. See, there's an emotional booby trap, man. It's trap my thinking and trap me, man, to where, you know, everybody's against me. Yeah. That's the emotional booby trap, man, you know, that I have to watch out for. The Tim Smith talks about it, man. The emotional hangover, the direct result of yesterday to sometimes today's excess of negative emotion. You want some negative emotion? Turn the news on. You know, I love the Valley Group, man. This is my neighborhood, man. This is my neighborhood. This is where I hit my bottom. This is where I had my spiritual awakening. In AA, we call it a spiritual awakening. In religion, they call it being born again. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have two lives. We have two lives. A life full of selfishness, self-concern, no regard for society, no regard for anyone else. This one guy says in AA, he says, what is that word, society? He says, you know, that place they threw you out of, man. Then we come to that comfortable place, man. You want to be comfortable. To seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. You know, the old timers used to tell us, lack of power was my dilemma. I didn't have the power to stop drinking and using drugs on my own, folks. I didn't have the power to stop hating. You know? Lack of power was my dilemma. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace. That where there's hatred, that I may bring love. That where there's wrong, that I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there's discord, that I may bring harmony. That where there's error, that I may bring truth. That where there's doubt, that I may bring faith. That where there's despair, that I may bring hope. That where there's shadows, that I may bring light. That where there's sadness, that I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek to comfort rather than to be comforted, to understand rather than to be understood, to love rather than to be loved. For it's in self-forgetting that one finds, for it's in forgiving that one is forgiven, and it's in dying that one awakens to eternal life. You know? That's a comfortable step, man, the 11th step, and it's here for all of us, man, and nothing is hidden here, man. Nothing is hidden from the newcomers. We're an open book, man. We have to do, the old-timers have to do the same thing the newcomers have to do. There's no seniorities over here, man. There's guys that have a lot of sobriety, man, you know what I'm saying? But you know, the longer, the more sobriety you have, the smaller you get. I often have to think about Rule 62, man. You guys know Rule 62. If you don't know it, find it, man, because it's there for you in the traditions. Rule 62, don't take yourself so serious. Don't take yourself so serious, man. Everything is a federal case, man. We seek to prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him. Progress, not perfection. We don't have no perfect people, man. There aren't any perfect people. A lot of people that might think they're perfect. But this is a program of progress, not perfection, man. Every day, I try to be better today than when I was yesterday. And I often have to remember, man, Rule 62, and remember what the old timers taught me. He said, hey, I ain't the man I ought to be. And I ain't the man I want to be. And I'm not the man I'm going to be. But thank God I'm not the man I used to be. I thank God for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. And then we come to the joy of living, man. You know, everybody wants, you know, a little piece of the cake, man. Everybody wants a little joy in their life, man. You know what I'm saying? I mean, everybody wants to be free. Even animals want to be free, man. Try catching a little squirrel. I have three little cats at home. Anybody want a cat? Try catching a little cat and he'll run away from you. He wants to be free. God made us to be free. He didn't make you or me to be empty. I filled up, you know, the tank today, man, because I knew we were all coming up here, and I didn't want to run out of gas with my, you know, my sponsors, man, and the dollars over here. That, but, you know, you can't run on empty. When I stopped drinking and using, there was an emptiness in me, man. In AA, man, we filled that emptiness. God didn't make you or me to be empty.
There's a purpose for you and there's a purpose for me.
And thank God.
And then we find out that there's a purpose for people like us.
Yeah. We need each other, man. We need each other. Shit, when I was drinking and using, I used to have an attitude that I don't need you. People used to say, what, something about me that wasn't right. I said, well, I don't need you. You think you're better than me? Yeah. I have to be better than me. I have to be bigger than me, not bigger than you. I have to be bigger than me. And that's why I go to AA meetings, man. To help me to be bigger than what I am. Little things bother little people. We said, you know, little things bother little people. Don't sweat the small stuff. Everything is small stuff. Become the joy of living, man. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I used to ask myself, well, when in the hell, man, am I going to get there, you know? Especially when I walk into my own home. But today, I know it's because I wasn't practicing it in all my affairs. Not just for 45 minutes, man, or an hour. But in all my affairs, I want to do God's will to the best of my ability. Because I know his program is better than mine. I want to do his program, man. And he's alive and well, man, in Vitalia. God's alive and well, man, you know, in the San Joaquin Valley. Alive and well in Fresno. Sure, we have problems, man. But we're aware of the problems and we're taking care of them. You know, what is it, 360-some meetings a week in Fresno? 365 meetings a week in Fresno, man. You know? So, you know, there's meetings for us, man. And there's a lot of us, and we need each other. You know, when I came in, man, the guy got a pencil, and he said, you get a pencil in your hand, and the easiest thing in the world to do is to snap that pencil. But you get a lot of pencils, and try snapping them, you can't do it. That's the way Alcoholics Anonymous works, man. We need each other. We're all in the same boat. And the name of this boat is the solution. Yeah. That's the destination, man, the solution. Yeah. That's where we're headed, man. For the good life. We come from the crazy life to the good life. Yeah. I'm grateful and thankful, man, for AA. You know, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. You know. And I'm grateful to be here in beautiful Vitalia, man. And I want to thank you guys for having me here. God bless you.